From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another Friday edition of Locked On Chiefs. I am Chris Clark. I am the managing editor of LockedOnChiefs.com. Thank you all for listening. He is Ryan Tracy. Ryan, you want to tell him a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you know, you can find my video work over on RGR Football on YouTube. There's a link in the notes. And I do the physiological analytics for all the draft stuff, including the supplemental draft. I will have some news out on that here pretty soon. Over at Rogue Analytics. So those are the two spots that I'm at, as well as writing at Locked On Chiefs every now and again and doing this show.
So today there is not much news. It is the dead time of the year. The only real news, and really it's not Chiefs related. It's going to be an interesting story to see how this, I don't know if you saw the Janoris Jenkins news.
I did just briefly. We're recording a little bit early this week, folks, and it's come out and I'm just kind of baffled.
Well, we don't have enough information right now. And by Friday, when this airs, we may have more information, but I still don't think we're going to know all the details that people are going to be wanting to ask questions about. So very, very interesting story. He's been in Florida ever since camp broke. So this has nothing to do with him.
Well, that's a plus. I mean, the circumstances aside, who's staying at your house and that kind of thing. But if you're not involved, then that's good. Because initially when you see headlines, it always leads you down the darkest path.
Yep. And unfortunately with today's society, it could have been the darkest path for that situation, but it was still the darkest path for the person whose body was found. So we will see how that turns out and what we find out in the coming days.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, you know, and as far as the Chiefs go, not a whole lot going on right now. It's been very, very quiet, but.
Oh, I guess there is one little bit of the news we could talk about.
Okay.
The NFL is not allowing MD on LDT's jersey.
You know, it may be out by now, but I'm working up on a video on that because I'm a little bit appalled, to tell you the truth. And I don't know what your take is, if it's just, if you think it's a novelty or not.
No, I don't think it's a novelty. I think it's ridiculous. Appalled is a lot stronger than I would probably go. I'm disappointed because to me, it makes no sense.
And I'm going to do a video on this, folks. So please go check that out on YouTube and I'll go into more detail, but here's the gist. Cause I don't want to take the whole show with this today. My thing is you had an opportunity to do a positive thing for multiple aspects of this situation, for the player, for his community, for the country that he comes from, and for your fan base, as well as your reputation as a league, and they completely blew it on all accounts.
Well, and they also blew it because at the end of the day, how inspirational is the story? Right. And whether or not people are going to know he's an MD because it's not on his jersey, I don't think that's really going to be an issue, but still, it's not smart on the NFL's part, in my opinion.
No, it could have done a lot of good for a lot of people and the NFL itself. It's just a short-sighted, poor decision. And like I said, I'll give you all of my take on the video. But you know, we're here to talk about the Chiefs today. Where do we want to go in terms of what's today's position review?
Well, we kind of already started talking about the offensive line, so I think we ought to just continue that process. I think that we're kind of segued right into that. So,
yeah, that makes sense. And clearly, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is entrenched at the right guard position.
As he should be.
Yes.
Which 2 years ago we would have never said, but times change.
And that's fair. And, you know, he has earned that second contract in the form of an extension. He is 27 years old, but he's making $5 million this coming season. Clearly the highest paid guard on the roster and a guy that I think honestly makes Mitchell Schwartz better.
Yeah, because at that point, Mitchell Schwartz doesn't have to necessarily worry about guys getting beat, the guys beating him inside necessarily near as much or stunts near as much because I think they have a chemistry together. So yeah, I do agree. I think it does make Schwartz better, and Schwartz is fantastic in his own right.
Yeah, and I think what you saw is when LDT got hurt last season, things changed. Running the ball changed. It coincided with a downturn in Kareem Hunt's production. I think that's natural. And like you said, Mitchell Schwartz is still a very, very good tackle. He is the elder statesman of this O-line group at 29 years old.
But one thing I do want to point out about LDT that we haven't mentioned is what made him so good in the running game.
The guy's nasty.
Exactly. I mean, missed that during the season when he went out. He is nasty. He plays with an edge. And for a guy that, you know, like I said, whenever he was drafted, I don't remember, was that 4 or 5 years ago? Never thought he'd amount to anything. He always had an edge, but didn't think he was going to be near the player he is now.
For an offensive lineman, he is an exceptional athlete, both in his functional strength and his lateral agility. He is amongst the top 5% in this league for everyone that I've ever tracked at Rogue Analytics in their athletic matrix for O-line, regardless of what position they play. So,
he's obviously smart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that helps. You know, often you might not think offensive linemen need to be smart, but they do.
It's a thinking man's game down there in the trenches.
Yep. So Chiefs are really lucky they have him, and I'm not going to try to anoint McKenzie as the next great guard for Kansas City, but, man, if they could pull two of those types of moves off in a 5 or 6 year stretch, they'd be sitting pretty.
And that's for sure, you know, and it's an interesting development there. But clearly, I think he is more – McKenzie is a defensive lineman and that solid lower body. I think he's a guy that should probably be on the right side, on the stronger side, whatever, classically strong side of the offense. Your left guard is a little bit different. And we're going to talk about that here in a minute. But like I said, Schwartz is so good. And I was wrong. Jordan Devy is a touch older than him. But I'm honestly at this point not sure Devy's going to make this roster.
I think he's going to have a hard time making the roster. I agree in that sense.
And before we go to break, we have Eric Fisher at the left tackle, and we have Mitch Morse. Now, those are your starters on paper. Obviously, Morse has had the injury. How concerned are you right now about him being back in time for the season?
I don't think I'm concerned about him being back in time for the season. I'm concerned about his long-term health. For a guy that I thought played really well as his first year in the league, and I think was pretty injury-free most of the first year. Second year, battled concussions. Last year, battled the foot injury. I mean, that's really hurting.
Yeah, I mean, if you could pick two things you don't want to see happen to your offensive lineman, it's a concussion and a lower body injury. So it puts him in a tough position. And I'm not sure if he's going to be back and ready by week one or not.
And the big question is how big was that foot injury that he tried to play through? Because that happened, the Eagles game, which was week two or week three, and he is still trying to recover from it.
Yeah, that's quite a long process.
And I know he had another surgery, but still, that's quite a significant injury. So that is definitely something to take a look at and be concerned about. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. So we've talked about the starters. Although we didn't really talk about Fisher too much, I suppose we should.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not forget him.
you know, honestly, I think he plays pretty well for the most part. I think the thing I've seen from him is he struggles when he doesn't have a good guard next to him. And I don't know if that's him trying to overcompensate or what it is exactly, but it's kind of the inverse of Schwartz with LDT.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like his functional strength has come along. When he got in the league, he was underpowered. He needed a couple of years to get stronger, and he had some shoulder issues that obviously slowed that down.
Right, but you're also going to have that coming from the small school he came from.
Right, but regardless of where you come from, if you have it, you have it, and you have to deal with it. He did. I think last year what we saw is that it was some recognition issues, and like you said, having that confidence to your inside gap. So he is clearly the Chiefs' highest-paid lineman. Arguably their best at this point. And this is really kind of a turning point for him. I think you have to say, I mean, it's a toss-up between him and Schwartz and LDT, I think.
Mm.
I mean, statistically, you can look in one direction in terms of aggression and being able to play both the run and the pass. I think he has the edge over Schwartz in the run game.
The funny thing about Fisher that we will never really get rid of, I don't think, is that he can be really defined by two plays in his career. Well, he can. The play against J.J. Watt where he's standing over him and looking like, I'm just going to hurt you if you try to get up. And then the play against Jerome Harrison where he gets called for holding.
Yep.
Those two
career defining plays.
Yeah. And I still don't think it was holding, but.
Right. But at this point, you know, he's better in the run game than Schwartz is, in my opinion. I think Schwartz is a little bit better in the pass.
He can move too.
Right. Exactly. He's underrated as an athlete. He can get out on the edge. And that's one thing that with all this talk of spreading out and using running backs as receivers more, I think one thing that you're going to see a lot more of is getting tackles on the move. Because in particular, on that side, Eric Fisher can run. You line a tight end up on him, have them slam down, and he can get out in some space and do some good. So I hope that they use him to his full advantage.
Yeah, and I think if the key to this entire offensive line is figuring out that left guard spot. Until you do that, I don't know that you're going to see what you really should be able to see from Fisher and even Morse. I think Morse doesn't struggle near as much, but he's in a worse position because he has two different gaps he has to worry about.
Right.
Now, and you know, with LDT, he doesn't have to worry near as much, but yeah.
Well, and there's still the wrinkle. You know, you got to play your best five linemen. Yep. And hopefully you got to play them in the same position so they can get used to each other. That is a serious thing, the continuity along having the same guy line up.
Wait a second. You. Offensive line chemistry? What are you talking about?
Well, hey, it's consistent. and I'm still not beyond the fact that if Mitch Morse does come back and they feel that he is the best option at guard and they think Irving can be a serviceable center, you have to run your best five, and if that's the way it works out, clearly in my mind, what you have is your starting four and Cameron Irving. I still think he can be a good guard, but they have him at center right now with Morse out.
The interesting thing about that is for the past couple of years, what we've talked about is moving Zach Fulton to center and Morse at guard. I honestly think that Irving could be a better center than Fulton. He moves better, at least. He's better suited for this offense as opposed to being more of a mauler like what Fulton was. So to me, it would make sense if you shift Morse over and allow Irving to play center if that's where you want him to play. Now, the issue you're going to run into there, and I don't think that they're going to do that, mainly because I think that they want continuity at that center position, and I think they want Morse there. And they want Irving as their backup that can pretty much play any position on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think Irving is perfectly suited to Zach Fulton's role and just be the guy on the interior that can play all three positions and let it go. Yep. The question is going to be whether Morse is ready to go or not at center. And if not, then I think Irving clearly is the next guy, which brings us right back to the same debacle at left guard. And it comes down to you have experience with Whitman, who I still feel is overpowered. Witzman, sorry. I still feel he's overpowered. I still feel that he's not athletic enough for what Andy wants to do. Then you have Parker Iyengar, who got hurt early in his career, showed some signs, at least on the athleticism side, but still, even with his recovery, probably needs more strength. So, yes, he'll do the things that Andy Reid wants to do in terms of the move offense, but he's underpowered at the point of attack again. And then you have this newcomer that we've been hearing about in Ryan Hunter, who technically is a tackle. And he's a decent athlete. I ran his matrix, and he's a little above average in a number of things. He's not LDT. He's not Mitch Morse. He's not Eric Fisher. All of them are more athletic in terms of their measurables than Ryan Hunter is. But if you're talking about Iyengar, Witzman, Irving for that guard spot, you still need to swing tackle. And Witzman can do that as well, but Hunter might be the guy that ends up in that slot.
Could be. How nice would it have been to be able to, you know, just plug in Quentin Nelson at left guard this year?
Oh, stop.
Just throwing that out there.
I would literally be wearing overalls to camp every day until Sherman got the ball.
I have no doubt.
Quentin Nelson is LDT on steroids. Sorry, Quentin, I don't mean to actually say that, but he's a pumped up version. You know what I mean? He is the quintessential nasty guard that will beat you into the ground and then and honestly sit on your chest.
Would have been great to be able to get him, but obviously Kansas City didn't pick that high, and you're never going to trade a fantastic guard, even a generational guard, for a franchise quarterback. So,
no. But I could still want one.
Yes, you can. just like you can want Sherman to run the ball 15 times a game, but it's not going to happen. So
I'll settle for 5.
Yeah. Well, everybody else will settle for 0. But that's neither here nor there. We're talking about the offensive line. Let's take another quick break and we'll be right back. All right. So we got the starters. And my question to you is it a question of who wins the left guard job that really decides who's on the final roster? And how many do you think they keep?
I think you're looking at 8. I think they want to go lighter because they have so many talented people at other positions, particularly on the edges at wide receiver and cornerback. But this group hasn't been particularly durable. And I don't think you can go down to 7 and feel comfortable. So I think that at least 8, possibly 9, if they feel like they've got the right combination of defensive backs. But it boils down to, I still think Parker Ehinger, underpowered as he is, if he has recovered from his knee, and we haven't seen him enough, the press hasn't even seen him. We talked to Cody. We've talked to Matt Derrick. We've talked to people who have seen him in person, and we still don't know if Parker Ehinger's fully recovered or not.
We're not going to know that until camp. I mean, there's not exactly enough line play in mini camp and in OTAs, so we're not going to know that till camp, and we'll have to see how he performs at camp. If he comes out and performs well, maybe he is going to be that left guard. So if you put him as your 5th guy, that makes Irving your 6th guy. And then you have to question, okay, well, is Hunter your 7th? And if Hunter is your 7th, is Witzman your 8th?
I think it comes down to those two in those two slots. I have a feeling that while Andy Heck might want to go with, you know, the guy that he knows, I wonder if the better fit isn't Hunter. We'll have to see how that works out. But I clearly see them as 7 and 8. And then comes the question that I know you've brought up a couple of times is, you know, you want to hang on to Khalil McKenzie because of potential. And maybe you're not sure that you can get him onto the practice squad. You can't keep 9, in my opinion. Maybe Andy disagrees with me, but that's a stretch at that point.
Well, you know, it really depends on how Hunter looks in the preseason. It's possible that maybe he doesn't look great and they're able to stash him on the practice squad and keep what's been in McKenzie. But yeah, I have a real question whether or not they're going to be able to keep only 8, because I just feel like they're not going to give up on McKenzie if they're going to flip him to guard. That's not a change that you try to make in a 3 or 4 month period. If you really are going to invest in a player and draft a player, and they traded up for him, if I remember correctly, that's something that you're going to actually give an opportunity to, and you're going to give an off season to learn the position and not just throw him out to pasture if he isn't able to pull off in 3 months.
Yeah, and that's fair. The investment, especially in draft capital, is something that is a consideration. But I still feel, personally, I think they can get him on the practice squad because of the position change in particular, and knowing that even if other teams liked him as a defensive tackle, that he hasn't been practicing that and that he has not a single rep as a defensive tackle in the league.
I think Oakland picks him up if they cut him.
I don't think so. I'd love to tell you that Reggie's in charge, but I'm not so sure.
Well, that is a story of another day. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. And we will be back next week with a whole new cast or with a whole new list of shows. So Thank you again for listening.
A cast of characters. That's what I like.
There you go. Cast of characters. Thank you all again for listening, and you have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTracyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.